This is the Loud Pedal Podcast with Chris Stubbs and Lee Holdsworth.
Well, hello and welcome to the Loud Pedal Podcast post-Tailem Bend edition, brought to you by Super Cheap Auto. Did you know that Super Cheap Auto offer a range of fitment services for your car? Plus, with more than 250 stores across Australia, there's a Super Cheap Auto store near you. Find a store or shop online at supercheapauto.com.au. Welcome, Lee Holdsworth.
How are you, Stubbsy?
Real well. How are you?
I'm going great.
That's good. That's good. And welcome our special guest this week, team principal of the Red Bull Holden Racing Team and owner of 888 Race Engineering, Roland Dane. Roland, how are you?
Yeah, good day. I'm well, thank you.
That's the way. Still coming down from the high of another MotoGP epic. You certainly love your bikes, don't you?
Yeah, it was an epic, wasn't it? It was a real last corner sensation.
It sure was. It sure was. The calendar has been released. Lee, first of all, as a driver, what are your initial reactions to it?
Oh, well, I think it's good that we've reduced them down a little bit. So we've got it, everyone's got a little bit more money in the pocket. But also, yeah, there's some pretty cool add-ons there with the Gold Coast Night Race. That's going to be sensational. I can't wait for that one. And then, you know, obviously it's a little bit disappointing with the Phillip Island to be dropped, but as a racetrack, I love going there. It's such a cool racetrack, and one of the best in the world, but really we're not getting the crowd numbers there, so probably had to be dropped.
Yep, something's got to go if we're going to condense the calendar as was the plan. If you want to see the calendar in full, of course, you can head to foxsports.com.au. Roland, 14 events, one less. Is it the right number?
To be honest, I'm a big proponent of quality over quantity, and always have been. And I think the right number for us is between 12 and 14 as a national championship, and no different from every country in the world apart from the United States, which obviously has a massively bigger population. So I want to see quality over quantity. What we have got now is some much better spacing between almost every event. Only the last two events had to be compacted up just because that's the way the cookie crumbles at the back end of the year. That'll help teams a lot in turnaround times, giving people the time off that they deserve, you know, when you're working weekends and everything. And trying to give us enough time to catch our breath in between events, and that'll save money as well. But I also like Lee, I like some of the exciting things about it, like the lighting on the Gold Coast, going back to Sydney under lights, etc., is just going to, I think, enhance the quality over quantity again. And Phillip Island, to be honest, Phillip Island, I love the circuit. It's a sensational circuit to even walk around, let alone to drive around. But the pit facility at that venue is outrageous.
Yep.
It's got the best strip of tarmac in the Southern Hemisphere, pretty much, and almost the worst pit facility. And it's dangerous, and it needs to be replaced. And we also need a better crowd there. The two things.
Do you think then this is a bit of a political move by Supercars to try and force Phillip Island to do something about their facilities if they want to have us back? Would that be a factor and part of the decision, would you think?
And I don't, not really. I think it's a question of more particularly the crowd. And you know, the places that get more people there are going to take precedence. I think the circuit looks great on television. It really does. So, you know, even if it's cold, as long as it's not raining, it really comes over as a beautiful setting. If people aren't going there, they're not going there. So, it's not just us. I mean, honestly, yeah, MotoGP still does okay there, but the other day I was watching the Wayne Gardner 1989 stuff again, and where there were three or four times as many people as go down there today. So I don't know what you blokes in Melbourne are all about, but you're not very good at getting off the couch and going to watch the race, are you?
Oh, good about that. Have you been to the MCG? Have you seen the footy codes? Maybe motorsport, we don't get behind it, perhaps.
So, Roland, no QR on the calendar. Is this good or bad? It's Red Bull's, obviously Red Bull HRT's test track and a number of others. So what does that do for you guys? And does it mean that you lose it as your test track or do you keep it?
No, we keep it as our test track. But it is a good test track. It might not be the most exciting bit of tarmac in the world, but it, as you well know, it's got a pretty good selection of corners on it. It's easy to use as a test track. On one level, it's a shame that we're not going there. But on the other level, you know, when you've got to choose between which of the races that you need to try and support and on an ongoing basis and have priority in each state, then clearly you want to go to the Gold Coast and Townsville. Some of the customers who go to Ipswich, to Queensland Raceway, will hopefully come to the Gold Coast.
So is this more of a fact that we've got too many Queensland rounds or, you know, with QR involved as well?
Not necessarily. You've got to have a spread though, yes. But we've, you know, don't forget that in recent years, there's in supercar land or in motorsport generally, you know, we've got circuits that keep on being under threat. You know, so we've lost some good ones, including, you know, Oran Park. We always are told that, well, Sandown will get made into a housing estate any minute, and luckily it hasn't been. Mm. But that conversation's been going on the 16 years that I've been in Australia. And at the same time, we've only had one new venue at Tailing Bend. So at the end of the day, I'm sure we'll end up going back to QR at some point. But right now, we're trying to have a geographical spread that makes sense and also work with the tracks that are the best facilities, and not just for the competitors, but for the marshals and for the spectators.
Roland, you said before about the cost minimisation, and that's obviously a huge talking point in the sport overall at the moment. How much does a race event cost? Obviously, they would vary from event to event, but in general, to drop one race from our calendar, how much would that save a team?
Yeah, if you don't include the labour cost and you take a race at the cheaper end of the scale, then it's about $75,000 to $80,000 per car just in the direct cost, so of running the car and the logistics that go with it. So if you got a two-car team and you're not going to Phillip Island, for instance, it's going to save, Phillip Island would save a little bit more than that. It would be about $85,000 per car. And so that's $170,000 across a two-car team.
Right. Before you
said, and that's without it taking into account any labour.
Right. You said before 12 to 14. Obviously, 12 and 13 are lower than 14. So would you prefer to see us lose one more if you had the ideal scenario?
It depends on the quality of what you're losing, right? And it depends on the benefits of what the extra one's bringing you. So, and you've really got to look at that carefully all the time. You know, I lived through the era of BTCC being very, very good racing, profitable, and big crowds, and then having a massive reset in 2001. And we had to go from 13 to 10 events overnight. DTM, they've tried to run more than 10, and they keep coming back to 10. They used to be 13 25 years ago before they actually went under for 5 or 6 years and disappeared. So it's a hard one. If you've got all the other deals around it that make sense, then, you know, doing 13, 14 makes sense. So And next year, we've got some quite exciting things happening. So in the context of what we've got for next year in terms of, you know, of night racing, et cetera, mm-hmm. I think that we've got enough things to make it worthwhile for next year. But you've got to constantly look at it and make sure that we're not stretching everyone too far financially, and also from the point of view of the employees, not only of the teams, but supercars television, events teams. You're not stretching their own personal lives just too far where they say, to be honest, I'll go and get a job outside the industry.
Yeah, 100% agree there, RD. So we've got the addition of the night races. Obviously, we've had one this year and one last year. We're now looking at three night races. They're obviously a huge in terms of the expense of the event, but they there's no doubt the best quality of viewing you get throughout the year. You know, it's on at a great time, prime viewing time, and we get crowd numbers. And obviously have Gold Coast also added to that. That's going to be fantastic with, you know, it's the nightlife there, and, you know, we'll all probably go out for a beer afterwards, no doubt. But do you think now we've got the right mix with the night racing and day racing?
Yeah, probably right there. You're probably right in terms of having three events that are lit. Lighting doesn't work anywhere. You know, for instance, there was what I considered an absolutely daft plan for ages to have Darwin lit up. Now, and there were two big drawbacks to that. The first was for us, you know, sensitive southerners down here, or even relatively south in Queensland, if you're there at 6-7 o'clock in the evening, you get bitten smithereens. So you have to be a hardened local to want to be there.
Or get sponsored by Aerogard, either or.
Yeah,
especially
exactly.
With that fair English skin.
It's even worse. It's half Irish. So, but the real thing that made it madness is that the town, if I call Darwin a town, not a city, but they'll have to forgive me. But it's a
we're big in Darwin. Be careful. We're very popular in Darwin.
the town of Darwin profits enormously from having us there in the evenings. You know, on Friday night, Saturday night, even Sunday night, we're there in the town spending money. Yeah. We're there going out to dinner. We're there, and the customers who come interstate, especially, and the fans to watch, they're out spending money. So, a big part of why we're so welcome there is because we provide an economic stimulus to the local community. So. If we're all out at the track, nobody's in the restaurants, nobody's in the bars, and nobody's doing what you do in Darwin, which is having fun on the night out.
And we know that it's not going to affect the people at the Gold Coast because you don't go out and party until 11 o'clock anyway.
Yeah, good point.
And you party till daylight the next day.
You are a Cavill Ave specialist, Lee Holdsworth.
I've seen Roland out a few times too, don't you worry.
Have you? RD, 200-kilometre races now for the super sprint rounds, so extending our race on the Saturday. For me, that's a bit of a no-brainer on two fronts, that you are paying the same to attend the race on Saturday or Sunday, and that the points for the races are generally worth the same, but you're not racing the same distance. So that's from an external point of view, not being involved closely in a team or as a driver. But what's your take on that? Is it an obvious step to make?
Yes, with the just always the proviso that, yeah, the kilometres cost money. They don't come free of charge. So, but, you know, we've balanced that with removing a round from the calendar. So I think potentially the races are more interesting at 200Ks. There's a very sort of very clear balance. You've got to try and be careful. The races are not too long. We used to have 300-kilometre races on a Sunday, you know, in 2003, 2004, 2005, and sometimes they were just too long. So the 2x200 at those venues is probably a good compromise. Gives a little bit of strategy, as we know, of how much fuel you put in on each visit to pit lane. So you've got to pit at least twice. So I think overall it's the right thing to do. My only fear with it always is making sure the scheduling is sympathetic, so the mechanics are not forced to be there until midnight every night, and Saturday night in particular, because it just then they're up relatively early Sunday morning, etc., and it puts too much of a strain on the whole thing. So you've got to, there are some places where it's necessary to go late on Saturday, but not everywhere. So to do with scheduling and everything else. So where you don't have to force people to working too late into the night, getting your car prepped for the next day, it should be avoided. But generally speaking, the 200K idea is a good one.
Lee, you would like to race more, not less, I assume. You're more than excited by this?
Yeah, I think it's great. And like Roland said, the 200K races do have a mixture of strategy, which, you go for a short stop or a long stop the first one, and others will do the vice versa. So, it does mix up the cars on track a little bit. I'd still like to see some kind of structure that mixes us up a little bit more, like an option tyre or something like that. I'm sure that's been thrown around a fair bit as well. But yeah, this is a good move. I think it'll be a good thing for the calendar, yeah, for sure. Just though 200s are very good, and the 250s sometimes are a little long. They get a bit processional. But the short races are also quite processional with, no stops. Everyone's on the same quality tyre, so you do need different quality tyres out there.
All right, sounds like the balance has been struck. Roland, James Courtney is parting ways with Walkinshaw Andretti United after some 9 seasons. Are you surprised with that and that it's been announced already?
Not really. I think we were in the paddock, I suppose. We were probably expecting it. It's been a long innings, but at the end of the day, James is nearer the end of his career than the beginning. And I think that the Walkinshaw crew will benefit from having a new senior, if you like, new number one driver in there to try and give them some new direction. So it doesn't really surprise me. James has probably got one more innings as a full-time driver somewhere else, and he'll probably get a bit of revitalization out of it as well.
To Team 18 is the suggestion. Lee, are you hearing otherwise? And what would you make of a move to Team 18 with the little asterisk disclaimer for your history with the team?
To be honest, look, I mean, Team 18, that's when I was there, I always thought that the two-car thing was the best, structure for the team to head. And, a one-car deal just doesn't really work anymore. Even if you are a customer to 888, I think they'll benefit a lot from having two cars, no doubt. I don't think it would be too bad a move for James, as long as he's still got that connection with the 888 boys, and eventually they'll probably be able to branch off and do their own thing. I'd say that's the next move for Charlie. It has been for a while now. I was trying to push him into it, and it seems like he's doing it. So. We'll
Roland, for our wealthy listeners, of which we have many, what's a wreck worth these days if someone's wanting to get into the sport?
A wreck's worth exactly the
what you're willing to pay?
What somebody will pay, like the car sitting outside in the driveway. It's worth exactly what somebody will pay. And so the market has to be established every time one's for sale. I'd venture to suggest that they're not as valuable as they were at the peak in 2009, for sure. But the market will decide, and should, that's right and proper, should decide what they're worth. And if Charlie needs another one, which he certainly hasn't confirmed to me, but he may already be out there shopping for one. There's probably one or two available out in the market at the moment.
Roland, obviously, it begs questions still about Scott Pye's future. He was very critical of the team's performance during the weekend. You obviously managed him and supported him for some time in his career. Do you see where he may end up or what his future would look like within the category? Still competitive for yours?
I don't know, but I'd be amazed if he didn't end up pedalling somewhere. He's shown he can do a good job. To be honest, half the time or more, he's been quicker than James the last couple of years. So he probably costs less, which makes him attractive as well. And no, I think that I'd be amazed if Scotty didn't end up somewhere. If he doesn't say where he is, which he may well do, but if he doesn't, then I'd be amazed if he didn't end up with a full-time seat somewhere.
Do you think maybe he was told something before the round and that's why he came out with those quotes on the weekend?
That's pretty heavy.
You never know, but Scotty can sometimes... He can sometimes say things, when it was maybe he hasn't thought through properly. And so I don't know if that's the case or not. He's certainly much better trained than he used to be from that point of view. I don't know. I mean, you know how hard those things can be sometimes and to process them and deal with them. But he needs to back himself because he's certainly more than capable of doing a good job out there.
I found out about Scott's ability to speak pretty freely only a couple of weeks ago when I may have suggested he be leaving Walkinshaw on air, but that's a story for another day.
Right.
I did want to ask about your relationship with Jamie Wincup RD. He's been very open this year about the team's struggles at certain times. You're happy for your drivers to say what they think. I guess he's an owner now, so does that give him a little more confidence to say what he thinks?
Well, whether he's a shareholder or not doesn't give him any any extra rights one way or the other. Look, I just honestly, for the most part, I just let them say what's on their mind at the time, and sometimes it's more emotional than other times. To try and artificially limit, I hate it. You know, when I'm a spectator watching F1 or something or whatever, I hate it when I think that the corporates or the team or whatever are holding the drivers back from saying what they think. And of course, you know, there are restrictions on our guys to an extent, but I do just try and keep it as loose as possible. And sometimes Dutto and I'll look at some comment from Shane or Jamie or Craig in the past and roll our eyes. But honestly, it's yesterday's fish and chip wrapper pretty quick. And so, we concentrate together on the things that really matter.
How's that going with Shane? I know he knocked back an interview on the weekend. He obviously wasn't happy with what had happened in the specific practice session where he had some struggles. Do you need to encourage him at times to make himself available when the good is good and the bad is bad? Or have you found that he's really evolved in that role, which doesn't seem to come naturally to him through his personality?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it does come particularly naturally to him, but he's streets ahead of where he was when he came to us at the beginning of 2016. Much more engaging. I watch him doing sponsor things for us, etc., which are away from the public eye. He's far more proficient at those. He's watched Jamie, he's watched Craig, learnt a lot. But sometimes he's sore, and mostly he's sore with himself over something, and he just needs to go away and let out some steam. We sometimes expect an awful lot of the drivers in the championship to be able to ram a microphone under them when they've just had a rubbish qualifying session, for instance. And I hate it when I see a driver standing there smiling about it and everything when he's just lobbed the car off at turn six and had a hopeless session. And he's smiling as though, oh, yeah, we'll get on the next day. I just don't like it because it's not genuine. Because inwardly, he's sore with himself or sore with the team or sore with everything around him and or her. And it doesn't come over. If you're a genuine motor racing aficionado, it just doesn't look genuine most of the time when people do that. So I'd much prefer to have the Shane version of things where, you know, he'll come back later on and be more measured about it than just expecting him to smile and say, oh, yeah, happy days, we'll do it again tomorrow.
Didn't you have a driver like that?
Well, we still do. but with him...
You can see through his smile sometimes.
Correct. When you know him, you also know that he's good at putting that on. But I've still had to, you know, restrain him after years ago at the Gold Coast when he said something he shouldn't have done because he was so angry about a bit of officialdom, etc. And so we had a policy from then on. If he gets out of the car with steam coming out of his ears, take him into the back, cool him off for 10 minutes before you allow him to get in front of a camera.
Mr. Lowndes extended his contract with you as a co-driver for another couple of years. That was a straightforward decision, I would assume. I know there were others interested. Did you have a bit of a fight to keep him?
No, none at all. I've never once since Craig signed up for us at the end of 2004, I've never ever felt I've had a fight to keep Craig in the team. And this time we agreed a figure. Yeah, I just wanted to know that our commercial deals were in place for the next couple of years, the major ones. And then said to Craig, those boxes are ticked now. Are you happy to sign up for a couple more years? He said yes. And so the essence of it was done in a couple of emails between us.
What about Shane and Jamie for next year? Obviously off cycle with the rest of the paddock in general. Is that a deliberate ploy by you to keep them within your fold? Or does it leave you with limited options at the end of next year should one of them depart for whatever reason it may be?
It doesn't necessarily.
So is it a deliberate ploy to get them away from that side of everyone else? No.
No, it's not. It's always a balance between making commitments that you can honour and the timing of them, et cetera, and that the drivers feel comfortable with. Shane, we've just kept rolling the contract over and over, and Jamie is slightly different in that Jamie... If you spoke to him in 2008 when he first won the championship, he wanted to retire in 2010. and then we got 2010. He didn't want to, and so but still, Jamie is increasingly looking at, you know, how long am I going to do? So it's a slightly different situation to Shane, who'll be driving a race car and hopefully getting paid for it when he's 50.
Now, you don't need me to tell you how to suck eggs. You're a smart operator. You've done your due diligence and you have a succession plan in place already, do you, for that?
Driver-wise?
Yeah, for Jamie.
Oh, I've got some ideas about it, around it, and it's going to... Your timing of other things are also important. Commercialities, where we're going with the race car, in terms of the, you know, what the category is going to look like in a couple of years' time, these sort of things are important to take into considerations, you know, when you're making changes to the team, and hopefully not making two changes at once. These sort of things as well. So, I've got a strategy, but of course,
what is that? You
can share. Yeah. and I'm certainly not going to share it, but for sure, at any one time, you're always thinking and then having to revise that plan around key people. And I'm not just talking about drivers. I'm talking about people that work for you. You know, that if so-and-so gets run over by a bus, what's plan B?
Are you... Are you part of that as well in terms of your succession plan? Obviously, the ownership appears to have been shared out over the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, certainly the ownership strategy has been to try and help the company to be able to continue If I go and, you know, fall off a motorcycle or kill myself in other ways that can't be discussed on the radio, and something happens, then I don't want everyone who works for 888 to have to be particularly concerned about it. And so I have been working towards that, and trying to ensure that there can be some continuity. And yeah, and maybe in 2 or 3 years' time or whatever, then Jamie is stepping out of the car and into a role, maybe not identical to mine, but similar to mine. And especially as, to be honest, I'm enjoying the development of our GT program.
Okay.
And I want to continue that, and that takes up quite a lot of my time. I've been to all the events this year, and including the testing and everything, and we've got one more to go at the end of September. And that's taking up time as well.
Lee, your future. You're part of the Silly Season chat. Where are you at the moment? Have you started having discussions? Do you know what you'll be doing yet?
Yeah, we're starting to talk about that stuff now. But this year was always going to be a finding my feet year in this team, and I feel like I've shown really good pace, but haven't put all the pieces of the puzzle together just yet. But I feel the potential's there definitely for me to be able to, you know, fight in the top three, and I feel that that's only going to improve for me. But I think the team see that as well. But look, we'll wait and see. Anything changes. Anything can happen in this game, and I'm not complacent. Sitting complacent at the moment. I know how much things can change, and so I'll just go about day to day, doing what I do, and try and get the best results I can, and the rest will sort itself out.
Dominoes are starting to fall, obviously, with JC making his announcement. Do you know a date or rough? Do you have in your mind? Are you happy just to wait and see what happens, or is there a tipping point?
The standard call is just to say Bathurst, isn't it?
I think it's worked for the last however many years.
It is always nice to go into the Bathurst round knowing what you've got going on next year. So, you know, the sooner the better for me, and I'm sure the team feel the same way, that they'd like to lock in something sooner rather than later as well, because, you know, as Roland has been touching on, you want to always be looking ahead for commercial reasons, and to make sure that everyone feels at one, I guess, so that you can all focus on the job.
Roland, did you have a laugh at Barry Ryan and Dave Reynolds and how all that played out over the weekend at Tailem Bend? Is Dave just shopping around trying to get his price increased, or do you think maybe he could walk away? You understand those situations.
Would be silly to do anything other than stay where he is. He's in a good setup there. He's got a good guy in charge of the engineering there, and Betty is happy to help fund the team to ensure that it's competitive as well. Barry does a good job there, Barry Ryan. I think that he'd be silly to, you know, where else is he going to go, to be perfectly frank? And so he'd be silly to leave that environment for something that else, you know, when you look at what's available, it's sort of going to be neutral at best, and maybe a step back. So I think he'll stay where he is. I think for Lee, I'd be tempted to actually wait until after the enduro season, although it's late in the day, because I think his combo in the enduros is going to be extremely strong with the two midgets in the same car.
Randall won't be happy about that call. About the other stuff, he will be though.
No, you'll have a really strong enduro season, and I think that'll only be to your benefit, frankly, as we roll around. And if you haven't done a deal whichever way before Bathurst, I wouldn't be too concerned, because I think there's actually a pretty good chance that you have a very good run over the Pertec Cup season.
Well, that's my advisor speaking there. So
I didn't know you had that role. I didn't know he was your manager. When did you do that deal? Lee, as my understanding is that with Dave, he's not being offered a cent more, yet he's won Bathurst since the last deal. You would expect an increase if you win Bathurst. What more do they want, surely?
Oh, well, I'm not too sure what the deal is there, whether he has been offered more or not. But, yeah, he's certainly a very good driver and one that's you know, very valuable. I think they're both playing hardball. I think Barry Ride's a pretty hard bloke. And Reynolds obviously thinks he's worth more. So, yeah, I don't think he could ask for a better place for him to be in. I think the environment suits him to a T. And he's got the team support. He's got a great engineer underneath him. So I think that's just going to play out over time. You know, I don't think you can expect anything, you know, to change.
And the other thing, Lee, you full well know, and everyone in the industry knows, that the wages, salaries, call it what you will, that drivers can command today are substantially less than they were 5 years ago. Yeah, that's just the reality.
Yeah.
And there's not as much money in the sport as there was, and the costs have gone up. So, you know, everyday things, energy, wages for personnel, et cetera, so have gone up. So the drivers in Australia have for many years been paid, to be fair, been paid more than equivalent series in other countries of the similar size.
Well, Lee won't even buy him a lunch, so they really must have dropped because before he came on air, he wasn't opening the wallet. Speaking of wallets, Roland, I remember an article, I reckon it was in the last 12 months, where you said, now correct me if I'm wrong, that you'd broken even the last couple of years. Is that similar this year in terms of profitability of teams, if you want to speak more generally, or your team, if you can be specific?
Well, I mean, I can only speak 100% accurately for 888, but last year and this year, break-even years. So, this is a business. It's full business. I'm not going to be honest, I couldn't afford to underwrite it for very long if we weren't making money. There'd only be a certain amount that I would do, but I'm never going to do that. I've always said, this is a business. This is flat-out a motor racing business, and it has to stack up on its own 2 feet. And if it can't, then we'll either do something else or we won't be there. And we'll put up with a couple of years of breaking even. But sooner or later, we've got to get back to making a profit out of it, because that's the best way to ensure not only the future of 888, its employees, et cetera, but also the category. Mm. You cannot have professional sport, all of it, running on the goodwill of a few people, which is, now it exists in all sports to an extent. Yeah, if you look at the English Premier League, there are clubs that run on the largesse of Middle Eastern royal families or Russian oligarchs or whatever, but there are also clubs with a sound financial footing as well. Mm. So we need a bigger spread of teams in supercars that are on a sound financial footing, as they used to be 10, 12 years ago.
Well, you've up to 500 races now. Congratulations on that milestone being reached at Tailem Bend. It's been a long journey, hasn't it? A very successful journey. Congratulations. Any particular highs or lows in that time that stick out, or a proudest achievement for you?
Yeah, thank you. It's a number that, honestly, is just a number. But the things that stick out are the big moments when you win your first championship race at which we did at Eastern Creek with Craig in May 2005. Obviously, winning Bathurst in 06 for the first time. One of my favourite moments is Abu Dhabi in 2010. When we rolled out with the Holdens for the first time and had a 1-2 in the first race. I think that shook everyone up. And then winning the first race with Car of the Future with Craig at Adelaide in 2013. And you know, in that massive moment at Newcastle a couple of years ago with Jamie winning the championship. These are things that really stick out. But there have been some lows as well. And Bathurst is the thing that's dearest to my heart personally. And we had every single race since 2005 when we haven't won it, it's because of our own doing. And we could have won every race since then, and including 05, and we haven't, which probably other people are very happy about, but I'm not. But the fact is, we've been in a position to win every single one of those races.
Well, it's not far away now before you get another chance. Gentlemen, how would you both sum up your weekend at the Ben Lee? For you, I think I caught you at the wrong time. I came to see you, I think it was after qualifying, maybe on Saturday for memory, or after you missed going through to the 10 in practice. I can't remember exactly, yeah. But it hadn't been a great session for you when I poked my head in. You were a little frustrated overall, though. How was the weekend?
In one word, underachieving. Big underachieving weekend for me. A few things from my doing. A couple of mistakes in qualifying cost me probably a top five on both days. Every other session, you know, I was pretty much in the top five. So, pretty frustrating. We underperformed, and as a team, we had a couple of things go wrong as well with the airbox fires in Will's car, my car. Which cost us some results as well. It was. I think that after all of that, as much as it was frustrating, I came out of the round with the best race car I've had all year on Sunday. But I wasn't able to do much with it. Stuck behind Cam. There are a lot of positives to come of it. But yeah, just I felt like we had a top five on the weekend in this.
Roland, on paper, you guys obviously went backwards from an outstanding performance there in the debut year last year. How did you sum up what happened for you? It's not that simple, is it, just to compare last year to this year?
Well, clearly not, because the other mousetrap has changed. And I suppose on Saturday we put too much emphasis on trying to beat something that we actually weren't going to beat. And we tried a little bit too hard on Saturday. On Sunday, I think Jamie's lap to be fourth in qualifying on Sunday, appreciably faster than we managed to go with the same mousetrap last year, was one of the outstanding laps of the year. But of course, only P4. Jamie, by his own admission, screwed up when he lost concentration for a couple of seconds in the last part of Sunday's race and should have been fourth and ended up fifth. It's a circuit where, I don't think with the wind, the dust there and everything, you can't afford to lose concentration for a second. By the same token, Shane sprayed it in quali on Sunday, which can happen, but he did. And we then came up with, to be honest, one of the best strategies. I don't want to go into all the people can work it out for themselves, but all the niceties of it, but we came out with one of the best strategies of the year to get him from there to sixth place in the race. So I think that showed the depth of the team to be able to dig in and find that amongst us to be able to get him up to that position at a place where bloody hard to overtake, to be honest, when we're all on the same tyre.
Do we need to do something about that if it's going to be, it is going to be an enduro next year, 500 kilometres in races that weren't necessarily a great spectacle? What do we do about it?
Soft tyre. Yeah, we can. I mean, to me, all this soft, they call it super soft and soft or something. Now that's all nonsense and bollocks. The fact is hard and soft. Yeah. And we need to be on the soft tyre, I think, there in order, wouldn't you agree, Lee, to try and spice it up?
I would definitely agree. I still think there wouldn't be much degradation. I think the way we could do it is to start the co-drivers. Start the co-drivers like we do it, like, pretty much everyone does at Gold Coast. How unpredictable is that race? Yeah. And that's a hard track to pass on. So, yeah, get this mixture at the front, and the main drivers have to drive their way back through to where they should be. Yeah, so I think...
Or just have two... I hate rules that say you have to do this or have to do that in that way. I'd prefer to have a rule that says you've got to have two driver changes, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
So that you've got to try... I'd think about how to do what you're suggesting using another tool. But I think the soft tyre would enable the drivers just to press a little bit harder. The hard tire running at very low temperature there, you know, the temperature of the track was very low. Yes, I agree with you, the deg won't be huge on the soft, but maybe the thing will just be a little bit easier to race on, a little bit easier to press on under braking. I mean, you guys will be the final arbiters of that. But I'd suggest it needs the soft tire and maybe the sort of tweak that Lee's talking about somewhere, just so the strategies are not all identical. It's not really a question of the co-drivers all starting. I'd like to see differences. So if you remember 2014, Jamie and Chaz started Bathurst because they were at the back, and they both smoked through that. In fact, I think Jamie got to the lead by lap 20 or something. So you had different strategies playing out as well. I'm getting at, and of course, then that came with the co-drivers against the against main drivers for some of the people later on. So I just like to, I agree that it needs to be spiced up more, but I'd think about how you achieve what we're talking about.
Roland, do you fear any more tracks coming up this season where you'll be at that disadvantage that you've spoken about compared to the Mustang?
We will be, to a greater or lesser extent, we will be everywhere because the Mustang at the moment is a better mousetrap. I mean, the reality is, which people don't necessarily want to talk about, but the last aero test was not well done. And at the end of last year, if it was well done, then we wouldn't be going back and doing another one. So that's the reality.
Do you think maybe the ZB should have been tested again last year? After well, you guys was. Nearly lapped the field at Sandown?
Oh, sorry, you mean it at the... During the season. I think during last year, the offset was difficult because you've got only six Fords, and that I mean, put the Nissan aside for a minute, you've only got six Fords, and it makes the sampling more difficult. But if, with all due respect to everyone else, if you took the 888 cars and the DJR Team Penske cars, last year it was very much give and take. And whereas this year, not quite sure what's going on with the 12 car, because it was highly competitive earlier in the year and doesn't seem to be now. But our two guys, along with everyone else, apart from Chaz, sometimes is just struggling to get on the same page as the 17 Mustang.
I know what's wrong with the 12 car. He signed a deal. You got all that. No, Fabian, if you're listening, congratulations on the engagement. I'll try and smooth that one back out. Go, Lee.
No, just getting back on the Fabian deal. He has been competitive this year, and something seems to have changed for him. Fabian is a good steerer, no doubt. So, I don't know. Obviously, the way they're tuning the cars at the moment, or maybe they're tuning Scotty's completely different. I don't know. But Fabian can't drive the same car, so they're going to have to achieve it by doing, another setup for Fabian. But it blows me away how much that's changed over the past probably three or four events.
It's severe. Roland, will we see another change to the Mustang before the year's out, do you think? Is it necessary?
I don't know. It's not in my hands. It's in the hands of Supercars, and Supercars they have the knowledge that nobody else does because they have the data. And one of the things that we've come a long way in the last 5-6 years or so with the sport and the technical department at Supercars is that all the telemetry which flows from the 100-odd sensors or whatever it is on the car to the team actually goes to Supercars before it comes to us. So in that millisecond, they capture what they want. They're not reliant on coming to us and asking for a download later on. They've got it all. So they've got data which will tell them exactly what's going on. And then they've been much smarter this year. And yeah, the standard of the people there has increased dramatically off season last year. So that they're then measuring the cars afterwards so that they know what camber we were running. They know what wing angle we were running. They know what ride heights we were running. And that, of course, can influence these things. You know, if you see the suddenly one car's much quicker in a straight line than another one, well, there might be a very obvious reason to do with ride height or wing settings rather than this bloke must have a 7-litre engine. They know all that, and they're getting just better and better at analyzing that. So the ball's in their court, to be honest, as it should be. It should not be teams making any of these decisions.
So Roland, what's the plan with the aero testing for next year? Do we understand where that's all heading? Is it going to be a wind tunnel? Is it going to be just better managed? How is it going to play out?
Yeah, so the way it should play out is to do what we've done in the past, but do a better job. So don't forget, Lee, that for years and years and years, basically since Blueprint came in at the beginning of 2003, we have never, ever had to argue about parity in any great sense until this year. So now that's not to say there haven't been little differences. There have been, but they haven't been big enough. Yeah, there have been other influences that have been bigger, whether it's team or driver or whatever, et cetera, have been bigger. So now the test at the end of last year was not well done, and the venue didn't help. And I don't want to, I don't want to talk out of school, but Supercars have come up with a better venue, should be more stable in terms of the conditions, because if you start doing aero testing in 30 and 40 kilometer an hour winds, you're wasting your time. So should be a better venue, but the tools that they will use, which they're developing at the moment, are far better. And I've got confidence that they not only will do work better with the venue and the tools, but actually they'll just do a better job all round because there's a far higher level of competence.
Roland, people seem to be speaking on your behalf. I don't remember hearing this directly from you. And they're putting forward the excuse of the twin spring change to a single spring as really impacting your team this year because you were so developed and advanced with the old format. Is that a legitimate play? Is that from your mouth? Is that correct?
So it's not from my mouth, but I'm prepared to tell you the truth. Yeah. Because when people ask me, they don't necessarily want to believe what I'm saying to them. But so to say it's had no influence would be incorrect because we were using twin spring for over a decade. But by the same token, it's also not the reason why we haven't been particularly good at a couple of venues. And there's one place and two corners at that place where I feel that in hindsight, it made we didn't get on top of the strategy that we've got in place since going to the linear spring. The twin spring most of last year, we didn't run a twin spring in the front of the car. Yeah, we've been capable of doing it for years, and occasionally we did. I think we did two races with it last year. Most of the time, we were linear at the front anyway. And at the rear, as Lee will know, depending on what the split of the twin rear spring is, there are actually times when you're pretty much linear because there's almost no split. And there were several of those places last year. So the answer is that it's had a very small effect, but it's had an effect on all teams one way or another, and maybe at different places and at different venues and at different times. So if we were, people say, oh, you're not winning races all the time, so it must be the twin spring. Well, the fact is that, with the only team outside of Chaz and Penske who've won races, who've won three races this year. So we've clearly got some sort of handle on it.
Yeah, okay. No, it's good. That's because, as you said, that's what people keep saying is the problem, so it's good to hear it from you. Lee, we'll let you go in a second, Roland. Thank you for your time so far. Scott, he's now equaled Craig Lowndes with the greatest ever winning season that we've seen. Where does he rate with the drivers you've driven against? Toe-to-toe, combat, what you've seen. Is he arguably the greatest?
Look, he's obviously doing a phenomenal job. You can't take that away from him. You know, it's hard to know how good a job he is doing because at the start of the year, like we've touched on, Fabian was putting it up to him. And since, the last four races, there's been no challenge there. So he's definitely got the car in a sweet spot. And obviously him and his engineer are working very well together. That team is very focused around Scott at the moment. So, I think it's too early to be saying okay. Whether he's the best ever or anything like that. It comes down to what equipment you've got. We'll see when he doesn't have the best setup. We'll see how he goes then, and you can rate him, I guess, after that. But look, he's doing, I'm not taking anything away from him. He's doing an amazing job, and he's pretty much untouchable.
Roland, for you, you've worked with, obviously, Craig, whose record speaks for itself. Likewise, Jamie, more championships than anyone else. Shane Van Gisbergen, you won a title with him in 2016. Where does Scott rate in your view in terms of his performance?
Look, to me, there are four standout drivers in the championship, and we've got a very high standard. Yeah, we've got a really high standard as a national championship in comparison with the rest of the world. But we've got Jamie, we've got Shane, we've got Scotty, and we've got Chaz Mostert, and those four guys, their records are good. Chaz hasn't got a championship. But they're all, I believe, that little bit above everyone else. Jamie's got seven championships, and so I think Scotty would even be embarrassed right now to try and start to position him on that same level today. He's got every chance that he develops and carries on, and as Lee says, wins when things are not optimal. Etc. And that'll make him from a really top-notch driver today into a great as and when that happens. And there's every chance it will do. But you still got to say, if you took him out of his environment with Ludo, who's as I know is one of the best engineers there is, if you took him out of the best funded team, if you put him into the techno car today, he wouldn't be winning. It's a little bit like taking Lewis Hamilton out of his car and putting him in a Williams. He wouldn't be winning. So you've got to always look at the bigger picture when making that assessment. And if the team is in the same way that you look at the Mercedes team, and you can't get away from the notion that it is focused around Lewis Hamilton. You look at the Penske team, and you can't get away from the notion that it's focused around Scotty. Mm.
So that's the top four in the championship. Lee Holdsworth comes in at number five for Roland Doane, I'm sure. Roland, Chaz, would you be hoping he only does a one-year deal so he's open to you at the end of next year should either of your boys not be happy or be retiring or anything else?
So has he left Tickford then?
Well, that's with the assumption. I wouldn't ask Lee because that's putting him in an awkward position.
We don't talk about that.
I don't know what deals he's on, but
you haven't inquired.
Chaz, well, he's at the end of his current deal. Yeah, that's all I know. Yeah, or potentially even that I've been told might not be the case. Ooh. But whatever.
Oh no, go on, please.
No, only from a contracts point of view, but that's always speculation because none of us know. You know, there's only there's two people that know. There's Tickford and there's Chaz, so they know where they stand on it, etc. And so there's no point in me getting overly excited. I'm not looking for a driver for next year, and the future will probably take care of itself.
All right, Roland, you've been fantastic with your time and very generous. We appreciate it. We have one last question before you leave that is a new thing we're doing for all of our guests. Who is the most...
Yeah.
don't make that sound wrong. It's a good one. And if you don't like it was the producer's idea. And if you do like it, it was mine.
Okay.
Who is the most famous person in your phone?
Me not counted, obviously.
Yeah, no Lee Holdsworth.
So we had a silly competition about this in Bangkok in 2012 doing Race of Champions when I'm standing there with Coulthard and Mick Doohan and Andy Prio and people, etc. And I can only tell you that I think the most famous person in my phone won it. And that was Mick. And he had somebody even more famous in his phone than himself. So, I think the most famous person in my phone probably today, because there are a couple of people in there who were more famous in their day, maybe. But today is probably Mick Doohan.
Very good. Not a bad number to have either to be able to pick up the phone and have a chat all things MotoGP. Thank you for chatting with us all things supercars on the Loud Pedal podcast today, Roland Doane. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, RD.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
A good sport, Roland Doane. Thank you once again to him. Our next guest today, double banger for the first time, I think, here on the Loud Pedal podcast in 2019, is a man who was the standout performer on Friday at Tailem Bend, and he is a co-driver and will be at Bathurst this year. Thomas Randall, welcome to the Loud Pedal podcast.
Thanks, Stubbsy. Thanks for having me. And great to actually meet the guy I'll be driving with, Lee Holdsworth. It's
a massive surprise, didn't it?
Yeah. I actually messaged this other driver the other day saying, have you heard of Lee Holdsworth? What's he like? Because I don't really know.
Well, I was
this
hoping
guy talks a fair bit of shit, if you haven't already realised.
I was hoping we'd get the scoop, but no, they put out a little media release instead, but I think it is one that we all saw coming. Congratulations. What's it mean to you, mate, to be heading to Bathurst as well as the other two enduros?
Yeah, thanks. Look, it's fantastic. I mean, it's been on the cards for a while, but to finally get it announced is fantastic. And to be honest, probably couldn't have been announced at a better time considering how well the weekend went. Mm. It seemed like we got some really good positive responses. So yeah, I'm really excited to be heading to the 1000 and driving with Lee. I think we make a pretty good combination, and certainly I didn't know Lee personally before the start of the year, but I feel like we get on like a house on fire. So, I mean, I hope he agrees with me.
I'm trying to put out the fires.
A bit awkward here. I feel like third wheel, you two.
You are sitting in between us as well.
We do get on, to be fair. We have a pretty good time and a good laugh. So
how's
it's going to be
go?
Good fun. Have a look at how he went on the weekend. He topped the first session, the co-driver session, and I think he was in the top five of our session, the first practice. So he made his mark straight away. And there's no better preparation than having a whole round in the main series at Tailem Bend and in the car, a very similar car to what he'll be driving with me. So I'm feeling really confident going into the enduros with that round under Randall's belt. And now we can firmly focus on putting the best package together for us both and going out there for a win.
Look, he might actually, some of his results on the weekend that he mentioned before that he wasn't happy about, he could go back and say the reason was because I didn't set the car up in the co-driver practice. He wasn't happy about that.
I was pretty disappointed that he didn't get to drive my car in the co-driver session, because that was a bit of a heads up for most people. But he did a great job. There hasn't been many wild cards come out and impress the way that Tom did.
How important is that, given that Bathurst just straight into the fire this year? There's no lead-in event. How important was it to have that run under your belt?
Yeah, well, I think that is the last additional driver's practice session as well before Bathurst, and to top the charts. And yeah, we weren't on brand new tyres like a lot of people were hoping and thought we did.
<I'm> assuming.
But yeah, to top that was really good. And I'm sure it was, well, I'm hoping it was a confidence booster for Lee as well to know that the guys he's steering with hopefully can half pedal all right. But for the rest of the weekend to go the way it did, I mean, to get in the 10 in practice two and go straight into Q2 on Saturday, that was a real standout for us. And we were working towards trying to get in the 10, knowing that I'd done that co-driver session and had that extra half an hour of track time. And even though that was probably so far in the back of our minds, but to do it was, yeah, phenomenal. And then we had really good race pace on Saturday, and to bring the car home clean and 2 17th places was really good. And look, normally the less you're on the television during the race, the better. So, the car was pretty much straight the whole weekend. And now I'm just focusing on watching Lee at Pukekohe from Melbourne, and then we'll hit up Bathurst, and I'll be there doing double duties.
He's the real shy retiring type, isn't he? Struggles for
a word. Yeah. Mm. Very. It's going to be a quiet trip on the way up to Bathurst in the motorhome. I might bring my earplugs.
At least you know Roland Dane just knows your name now.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
He gave you a fair little rap there, because your previous experience with him, tell us the story that you shared earlier on.
Well, if Roland is going to continue to listen to this podcast, he may or may not remember it, but 4 years ago, I was racing up at Gold Coast in the Formula Fours, and we'd just completed a track walk, and I was walking down the pit lane and saw Roland in his garage, and he didn't look busy at the time. I thought on a Thursday afternoon or Thursday night, it might have been probably the most quiet time that he would have had. So I went and introduced himself, and to be honest, it looked like he'd seen a ghost. And he asked me kindly to vacate the premises.
Hey, one thing you'll learn about Roland is time is money.
even when he doesn't look busy, he's busy.
He wouldn't have been making much money off talking to me, that's for sure. But I'm sure we'll have some encounters this year or the Enduro Cup season. So it's going to be awesome to be on the grid, and looking forward to it.
What scares you most about Bathurst, if anything? What is the part that really gets the butterflies going?
To be honest, I'm not 100% sure yet. I think I'll find out on the day or on the weekend. I raced there for the first time last year in Super 2, and my opening session was in complete monsoon conditions, and I seem to cope quite well. I think that the toughest thing's probably going to be over the top and following other cars, trying not to get serious aero wash and understeer into the wall. That's probably going to be the trickiest thing. And as the race goes on, concentration levels are still or need to be high, and that'll be the toughest thing, I think, just making sure that your pinpoint accuracy is the same as it should be at the start of the race. And as long as I do my bit and remember that, it's not my championship, it's Lee's, and bring the car home so he can go back out where the car should be, and we'll just go from there.
You read that off the notebook, that one. That was perfect, wasn't it?
I've practiced it a couple times.
Well. Yeah. I think the hardest thing for the young guys is, I can remember my first couple of Bathurst, the concentration is so hard to keep at that peak level for so many laps. Lap after lap after lap, you got to keep it within a tenth of a second. You've got changing conditions. You've got marbles building on the track. You've got aero wash. You've got so many variables out there that you've just got to be so aware all the time, and it's so draining. And for a co-driver, it's really like Tom just said, it's about bringing the car back straight and giving us the best opportunity at the end to fight for a win or podium and the car being in the best possible condition.
First corner at the bend in race number one on Saturday. Talk us through it.
I got to see it backwards, to be honest. I didn't have the best start, but got to turn one, and I think I'd only just started turning in, and I'd already had a hit in the rear right quarter. Sort of put me in half a spin, and then the front left just grabbed McCauley in that that continued on. So was very lucky not to get hit by another car. And that in turn probably put us in a better position because I was hanging around Simona. I'd qualified next to her and she ended up in a pile-up with Will. So in hindsight, it could have actually put me in a better position than where I could have been if I was still there leading into turn six. So might have avoided a collision there. And to finish that race where we did with the speed we had, I think was really good. So, but turn one, Bathurst, depends who starts it, but have to get through that for sure.
Well, 2/17, it was job well done. The future for you? Supercars next year, what are you thinking? Super 2, what are you hoping or what do you think is best for your development?
I'm definitely hoping supercars. That's the goal, to be on that grid next year. I think if we can have a strong Enduro Cup this year and try and finish the Super 2 season on a high. I mean, it didn't start on the best of feet. So Adelaide is always a tricky one for Super 2. If you don't get that first race under your belt, it sets you back because it's a progressive grid there where every other race we do, we qualify per race. So, yeah, we got taken out of that one. So that's just sort of put us on the back foot for the rest of the year. And then I made a couple safety car blunders up at Townsville, which I've read the rule book a few times after that.
That was a good one. That was a very good one.
Yeah, that was really good, really strong. We had the potential to have two wins there. Unfortunately, second race, we had an airbox fire. Just the perfect time, but the points gap to Bryce is probably similar to the points gap to Scotty,
yeah.
But we'll just do what we can, and yeah, Bathurst will be a very busy weekend, having the 250k mini enduro on the Saturday and then the 1000 on the Sunday.
Lee, airbox issues, it's a reoccurring theme, isn't it? Have you worked anything out? Debrief, have you had debrief yet, and what can you do about it?
Yeah, we actually had a debrief today and, you know, there's always plenty of chat about engine, issues or anything you have on the weekend. So we went through that today and they're working very hard to try and solve the problem because it's a bit of an unknown, to be honest, and it's something that is very, very hard to solve. Unfortunately, it seems to happen at the most critical times for us. It's like someone's got a button in the pits from another team, but... Look, there's no doubt that...
Normally, we probably would have accused Roland there, but yeah. In case he's listening, we won't this week.
It's frustrating, no doubt, but they, it's costing the team results, and they know that. So they're all over it. They'll be working very, very hard to solve the problem as soon as they can. But the problem is you can't get it, you can't replicate it on the dyno. So it's hard to then solve if you can't see it when you're testing. Mm.
New Zealand, got a couple of weekends off. What are your expectations there? Tell us what we need to know about that track and how it'll unfold. It'll be all about the Kiwis again, won't it?
Yeah, look, they always go well over there. But look, I feel like we're going to have a really strong round in the Bottolo car there. We've come off the back of a disappointing round. But like I said, we finished the weekend with a really strong race car. Which we really haven't had all year. So I'm looking forward to heading over there and giving it a red hot crack. No doubt, you know, all our cars will be very competitive over there at Tickford. But it's such a cool little exciting track.
It's
so wild. You know, you're coming through the first corner, all crossed up, trying to keep as much speed as you can, doing over 200K on entry there. Onto the back straight, you know, it's a good one for passing into then turn five at the end of the back straight. And you got the new section, the right left there and into the hairpin, another good spot for passing.
Yep.
But then the final corner is
one of
the most exciting ones.
Yep.
We've seen a few biff and barges through the second last corner with Fabian a couple of times, I think, rolling through there, and a number of other cars. So, but coming through the final corner really keeps your eyes open and, It's probably the most exciting corner on the whole calendar, I would say.
Yep. Turn 8 Adelaide, that.
It's so on edge. It's just on edge. And if you're not on edge, you haven't gone fast enough. But you go over the edge and you're in the wall on the edge, on the outside there. So I can't wait. It's a great little track and we're in for a good one, I think.
All right, we are almost out of time here. We will get your lethal weapon in just a second. So a couple of little things to close us off. Tom Randall, the most famous person in your phone.
Look, I've had a look, to be honest, because I don't really talk to that many famous people.
Or maybe someone on Twitter or Instagram that's given you a like recently, perhaps. That'll do.
Yes, Lando Norris did like the co-drive announcement, there which was pretty cool. But
was that the acting? Was that because it was the acting in between?
That was horrendous acting, wasn't it?
It wasn't great.
That was bad. Lucky we had our helmets on.
That was his new helmet too. We couldn't. That's the reason why we couldn't do the co-drive release, because he hadn't use that helmet until Taylor Bent.
Yeah, that's what was holding it up.
I'd have to say the most famous person I have would probably be Martin Donnelly. I'd say he's probably the most famous guy I've got on my phone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not bad. All right, Lee, it is time for the lethal weapon.
It's time for the nice guy of supercars to fire up. It's the Loud Pedal's lethal weapon.
Well, this is not going to go down well with my teammate.
What, Tom?
No. Cam Waters, if you're listening, I'm coming for you, mate. Next round, you held me up for over 20 laps and I didn't even hit you. Next round, if you're going to do that to me, you're not, I was going to say, in the fence. I won't do that to you.
Don't do that. That's good. Good fodder for us.
He's over there in Queenstown at the moment, holidaying and having a great old time. So I've got to make sure he listens to this, but he needs to get out of my way, especially when I put my headlights on. Like, that doesn't say get out of the way as a
put
teammate.
Put him in the fence, would.
Yeah, he's going to have to watch it next round.
All right. There you go.
That's
look
about
out.
All I got to
no,
today.
That's all right. I like that. Inter-team battles are always good. The championship standings, McLaughlin, Mostert, Coulthard, Van Gisbergen, Wincup, Reynolds, Waters, Percat, Davison, Di Pasquale, Lee Holdsworth in 11, and James Courtney is 12th. Thomas Randall, thank you very much. Congratulations again and good luck for the Enduro campaign.
Thank you very much, boys. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks, of course, buddy. A thanks to Roland Dane once again, who joined us earlier on, and to the great Lee Holdsworth, mate. Good to catch up and we'll see you again in a few weeks.
I'm a great now.
You're a great to me.
Wow. Oh, thank you. No, great to be on. Thanks, Stubbsy. Awesome show. See you next time.
All right. Don't forget, this is the Loud Pedal. That's a good way to end the show. Brought to you by Supercheap Auto. Did you know the Supercheap Auto offer a range of fitment services for your car? Plus, with more than 250 stores across Australia, there's a Supercheap Auto store near you. Find a store or shop online at supercheapauto.com.au.